To lead this city takes more than just fair-mindedness, Barry. Sometimes you have to be ruthless. He understood that. It wasn't always cruelty for the sake of it. I want you to know that.
What's your point, Blue Boy?
You can't afford to show me any compassion. You'll only win the contempt of the other tribes.
Don't worry. You'll be tried.
And found guilty and executed. If you're really serious about building a new world, then justice must be seen to be done.
Welcome to Series 3, Episode 35 of Conversations on Eagle Mountain, a podcast about the tribe. I'm your host, Lance, and joining the podcast panel today is Liz.
Hello.
Sabine.
Hi.
And Tamsin.
Hello.
With episode notes done by Matt and myself. So Series 3, Episode 35, the screenplay was done by David Fox. It was directed by Colin McColl, and the episode synopsis was read out by Sabine.
Luke stands trial for his crimes as the city eagerly awaits justice, while Lex refuses to feel remorse for taking revenge on May, and Alice puts Ned firmly in his place.
So yeah, panel, there's quite a few points in this episode, but we start off with a joyful one, because the episode actually opens with a very familiar face catching fish in the river. It is none other than Jack. And throughout this whole episode, we see him fend for himself and slowly make his way back to the city. So yeah, let's just talk about that first of all. What did you make of this sudden glimpse of our lost Morat and his new survival tactics, which we've not really seen before?
It was so good to see Jack back.
Absolutely.
I was really excited to see him.
Agreed. I was very excited to see him. It was just an unexpected burst of, oh my gosh, it's Jack. Oh, I didn't realize how much I missed you. It's what I'd been waiting for with the Chosen being over. Like, okay, let's tie up some of these loose ends and get some answers to all the people you just ripped from us. And it was fair that it was Jack in a way. I mean, since it's pretty implied that Danny's dead, it was fair that the next person to disappear was Jack on the roster. And so I just thought this was going to be the beginning of bringing them back, maybe in even the order they left us. And I was so relieved, and I didn't expect myself to be relieved to see Jack and realize I missed him so much. And I was so proud of him out there taking care of himself. And
yeah. Like,
come home, baby, come home.
It's such a relief to know that Jack's still there, still coming home. Not everyone's dead, and we don't have to go on an insane search to find the missing people.
Do you think they were going to go looking for them? Because
I kind of had the hopes at this point that when they were going to put Luke on trial, that one of the things he might do is give them the information about where people were sent. Mm. Because, you know, we had been told that people were sent to the mines, that he got Ryan to safety, Chloe to safety, you know, so I did have some hopes for that, and I didn't instantly think that, well, that means dead, because if Amber showed us anything, it's that isn't always the case. As for Jack's sudden skills, I think it's kind of fitting, you know, even though Jack wasn't normally a person to go out hunting for food, he has always had practical knowledge. I mean, this is the same guy that managed to rig up a water filter. You'd think at some point he'd figure out how to catch some food.
I mean, he's the idea guy. He has lots of plans and things in his head. I never thought he was practical in himself, but
I was just going to say he was able to secure the mole, though.
Mm-hmm.
Because he was the one who jammed
with gadgets
grill,
and stuff.
That's
Jack, yeah. But practical things, hunting, fishing, tracking, he was that kind of guy.
No, he was channeling his inner Del. He was just thinking, what would Del do?
Is it a callback to Del?
I mean, I think that leads directly onto my next thing that actually annoys me. how quickly this has actually happened. Because, like, this literally, been a day since the Guardian has been captured and the Maul's been saved. And all of a sudden, the whole Chosen regime, which we have been built up and been told is taking place across cities and towns all across, you know what I mean, this whole continent. And all of a sudden, Jack's free. Like, is the whole mining project's finished? All the Chosen have gone? Like, really? How?
I agree with that. That has always been a bit of bothersome for me. And it is a problem that compounds the more we get people who come back from these situations. They're so vague about where they were, what they were doing, what happened to them while they were gone. And they're incredibly vague about how they got away, how there was a breakdown of things, you know. And again, it feels like things happen. So these big, large leaps in personality and skill sets happen when the kids are off screen, when they're away somewhere. But when we have to watch them, we see very little progress. And they're growing as people and learning and developing, or things happening to them. So, yeah, I completely understand how you feel about that. And I agree with it, because it is just a day later. And it's like, it just doesn't feel like that's the way the Chosen would fall apart, especially if they're away from the city.
It always made me wonder if, you know, earlier on we got some mentions about some of the guards deserting, especially after Trudy was out of the picture and then Brady got taken away from the Chosen. Luke did mention at some point that there were guards that were deserting, but I always wondered if that meant the guards that were, you know, stuck in places like that were slowly leaving their posts as well. Because that, for me, that's the only way to make sense of this. Because it's just not possible that they got the news of the Guardians' downfall so quickly.
Mm.
That does make sense, Sabine.
Or that they wouldn't have been able to hold together at all, just because they got... I mean, how long would it even take word for to get out there and let them know that, you know, the city has fallen? You know what I mean? Like, you don't just immediately disband.
No.
But it's because we were never given any details about them that
it's
hard to imagine how this happened.
Exactly. What if, you know, something simple with the guards and the Chosen in the city deserting, maybe they just didn't get the reinforcements or the change of shift or whatever. And they just thought, oh, well, nobody's coming. Let's just leave.
It's just poorly done.
Can I ask a question? So I know it's already too late, but does anyone think that if this would have been a better time to introduce us to Ned, Tally and Andy, that they had been in the mines with Jack and that they'd all traveled back to the city together?
Would have been a better time to introduce Ned coming looking for his siblings.
Mm-hmm.
Like, we already knew Tally and Andy through the whole Pride debacle, and now their big brother has shown up to rescue them.
Oh, can you imagine, though, if Tally and Andy on their own had tried to sell Pride?
I think it'd been great.
I think it would have just worked so much better.
Yeah, I would have bought it a lot more.
But yeah, it would have been nice if we'd found Ned coming from the mines where Ryan was. Or, you know, if they had sent Ned there after he got drunk in the mall, to be fair. If he got himself in trouble and then got sent to wherever Ryan was in the mines, that would have been great. Better than him being back within half an hour.
And it's annoying as well, because like you mentioned earlier, Sabine, like, we don't even get, like, the Morats question Luke and, like, send out parties to search for the missing Morats. It would have been nice. Like, obviously, they're not going to find them. We know that. But we could have had them, at least a line that they're searching. They are looking for them. You know, something. But we don't even get that. We don't even get a line.
And there was just so much possibility with that.
Yeah.
Because, you know...
Yeah.
Unlike we get later with Jay, Luke admits that some things he actually knew.
Oh, we all get to that.
Yeah, the Chosen wrap-up is chaotic, it's messy, it's nonsensical, and it just, again, compounds on the fact that we weren't given good details on how the Chosen operate. So it just feels sloppy and lazy. Like, oh, they're over. They're done. And it's like blowing up the mothership. Everything, all the soldiers fell. But it doesn't make me any less happy to see Jack. Like, that's all I can focus on. Like, oh, yeah. Yay! You know, it feels like almost like the equilibrium of the mall will be rebalanced.
Yeah.
Getting mm-hmm. someone, an original mall rat back, you know?
Yeah.
I'm not enjoying the balance as it is.
No. I was the same. As soon as I saw him on the screen, I was like, Jack! I was so excited. I was like, you know what? You irritate me sometimes, but I'm so glad you're back. Mm-hmm.
So glad. I miss him so much.
Yeah.
And I just, you know, the moment I saw him, my first thoughts are, oh, this is going to be good. Let's see what Ellie has to say for herself.
This is going to get juicy.
He's going to pay for what he did. And shall I tell you how I know? Because I'm counsel for the prosecution.
Hey, you know what I was saying about being magistrate? You wouldn't care to reconsider, would you?
Oh, boy.
So, panel, it's quite a lot there. What do you make of Luke saying that he needs to be put down harshly in order for justice to be seen done in the city, and Amber and Ebony jockeying for position in this trial?
Can I pick up with the Amber and Ebony side of things?
Mm-hmm.
So, I really enjoyed the interactions between Amber and Ebony. And one thing I really enjoyed is how Ebony is so clever that she worked out all of what she had to do to get Moors to back off, but also to place her in a position of power, because that's what Ebony started to move towards. She started to move towards, where am I going to be in the hierarchy of this? And I don't want to be beholden to Bray and Amber, and they're so clueless. I reckon I can run this without them having any knowledge. And the other thing that I really liked is, for the whole way through, there are certain characters in the tribe that are foils to one another. So you've got that nemesis, direct opposite, and Ebony and Amber are the opposite of one another. They are each other's nemesis, each other's yin and yang, whatever you want to call it. And I think it was really interesting that as soon as Ebony became the prosecution, Amber thought, no, I've got to be the magistrate, and was able to be talked into it, because she actually knows Ebony better than Bray does, because she's the one who's already started to get the feeling that Ebony is scheming. And Bray, although he sort of kind of has cottoned on to that, he's not totally there yet. But I think Amber's very wary of Ebony and where Ebony might take this. So, yeah, I always enjoy their interactions. I wish we had more Amber-Ebony content, I'm not going to lie, because I love it. I love it because they're both on their A game whenever they have to go up against each other.
Mm-hmm.
And they come from such different places theologically that it's always interesting, and they always present their arguments. And you know, it's left to the audience. Whose side are you on? Are you with Amber? Are you with Ebony? Or are you in the middle? You know, because in this situation, Bray's the pragmatist. He wants to keep everyone relatively happy. He's prepared to use Ebony when they need her. And Amber, on the other side, is very much, we shouldn't have Ebony anywhere near this. And I find it really interesting, really engaging, and would love to have seen more of it throughout the series. So, yeah.
I agree that Ebony and Amber are at their best when their opposition is about ideology. Unfortunately, we don't get enough of that. It's often usually about Bray, you know. But when we do get to see them arguing because of their outlook on life and how things should be run and how power should be used, they are at their best.
And who better than Ebony to convince Amber that she should be magistrate?
Mm.
You know, because if Ebony's going to be the prosecution, then she knows that won't be a fair trial.
Mm.
So the only things he can do right now is at least try to have a fair trial instead of just Ebony slaughtering who she wants.
Yeah. And Amber has also shown time and time again that she will stand up to Ebony. We have seen that. Whereas other characters make a big show of standing up to Ebony, Amber's the only one who really follows through with that.
Starting with Luke, I felt like a suicide play, to be honest.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I mean, granted, he's not wrong when he tells Bray that you can't afford to be compassionate to me. You know, if you're going to succeed at what you're doing, And even using the Guardian and explaining that it wasn't all cruelty for cruelty's sake. Sometimes that's just what comes with having to rule the mob. You have to show that you're willing to go as far as you have to go. It helps keep people in order. He's basically speaking of fear, and he's not wrong. Sometimes a certain level of fear does keep the populace in order. But it also felt like it was good advice to Bray. It felt a little bit like a suicide play coming from Luke. Like yeah. he is desperate yeah. to kill his guilt mm-hmm. and doesn't want to walk away from this. And and that's not like that came out of nowhere. We know his guilt has been eating him alive, and he can't run off and play happy families with Ellie in denial of what he's done. He'd rather just face the gallows. So he doesn't have to think about it anymore. So he doesn't have to see the faces haunting him. He can't sleep. He can't think. He can't enjoy himself. He's constantly haunted mm-hmm. by his crimes. And so this for him is almost a relief. Like, I welcome your judgment. Don't go easy on me, you know. Though it did bug me that there's so much compassion being given to the Guardian. And yet, as soon as Luke offers himself up, oh, these guys have no problem showing him their disdain. And it's like, if you have all this disdain, you had plenty of Chosen you could have put on trial. You had the Praetorians literally right there in the mall, and all you did was escort them out of the building. Like, if you were looking for people who need to pay for their crimes, you had people to do it, and now you're acting like, oh, we finally found someone to unleash it on. And it was like, okay, you're going to act like, oh, the Guardian is helpless. We're so reluctant to do anything to him. But, oh, good. Luke, here comes our scapegoat, Luke. And we can, like, Bray, the way he's talking to him. And I'm just like, where was this when you're talking to the Guardian? You know what I mean? Like, it's just the way these guys are centering their anger feels so all over the place, to be honest.
Mm-hmm. But can they do that, though? Because Luke is offering his neck. He's basically saying, yes, I want you. I want to die. I want suicide by cop. Please. I'm happy to go to my death and to be the sacrificial lamb to let this all end. Is that the reason why they can be harsher on him? Because in a way, he's complicit. He's not offering any justification as to why he did these things. He's turned himself into a straw person for them to use. Could that be the reason?
That could be it. Yeah, I could see that. Mm. I definitely see it. Whereas anybody else would plead their innocence or make excuses, you know, for what they did with the Chosen, or try to alleviate, you know, like lessen their guilt or what part they played. And now you, as a human being, are trying to wrangle that and balance that. And it can be hard to justify your anger at someone like that. Clearly, we've seen they've had that problem. They're clearly having those problems. None of them want to be mad at Trudy. None of them want to be mad at Celine. None of them want to be mad at KC or Tyson or May. So, like, yeah, somebody who literally sets up and says, yeah, I totally did it. I guess it does make it easier to be like, okay, I don't have to feel guilty about being pissed off at you, you know, and unleashing my rage. So, yeah, maybe.
Actually, a historical precedence for this. So in the 1666 Fire of London, which was started in a bakery, but at the time, everyone thought it was Catholics who were trying to burn down London. Mm-hmm. And a lot of Catholics were attacked on the streets, and some of them were killed. And eventually this Dutch Catholic came forward and said, oh, no, I did it. I set London on fire. And they executed him. And I think there are some parallels there. Because even though they knew that he hadn't done it, they still were able to have a scapegoat to put this to bed, to say, well, no, we have put someone on trial and we can stop the reprisals. So
felt really lazy, though, because they could have done a better job telling that story. Like, if that's the story they want to tell about how do you find an appropriate scapegoat for the city to unleash their rage when there are so many people who it's gray. It's very gray about their involvement with the Chosen. Everybody has a story of why they ended up with the Chosen, how involved they were with the Chosen crimes, and can you try them for those crimes? You know, if they'd actually told that story, if they'd been committed to that, then I think this would be more poignant that, yes, Luke is the perfect scapegoat because he's the only one who isn't trying to escape his guilt. And so you finally have someone you can pin it on, but they're not telling that story. They're being very lazy about this. They, one minute they're very angry. Even people like Amber and Bray are very angry. And so they're expressing that they want someone to go, someone needs to pay for this. There needs to be justice for these crimes. And then the next minute, they don't seem all that interested in finding justice for what happened. Mm-hmm. They just want to move on. They want to move past it. They don't want to put any effort or energy into mm-hmm. there actually being justice for what happened with the Chosen. They talk at justice. They talk, justice, 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 going forth. But they want to sweep this under the rug. Now, that could just be the writers, but they're not telling the story very well. So it loses what it could have had, that Luke is the one taking the hit for everyone so that it can be a cathartic experience for the entire city to move on.
I completely agree with you, Liz. And especially the thing I agree with is the way that the writers seem to be picking up this idea and the way that they're discussing it. And like you say, it's very listless. And my whole issue with this is, why do you pick up a hot potato, which is justice and executions, right? And then mm-hmm. not really talk around it. Why do you pick this up, which is a huge thing? This is a huge thing to talk about. And especially since this show was primarily on Channel 5 in the UK. And in the UK, we don't have public, we don't have executions. We haven't had them since the 60s. I myself am very anti-execution. And it's a really, really hot button subject to pick up for children. And they're not doing any of the explanation around it. Because the goalposts continually in this conversation is shifted all the time. And the rug is pulled out from under us just when we think, okay, so yes, it's wrong to hang or to execute someone who is mentally ill. No, he's not mentally ill. Spoiler. Just when we think that we're going to have these big debates, because this is a huge thing to talk about, we're not talking about it. We're just saying, okay, well, we've got the mob and Ebony looks really good and Amber and Bray are not coping with the mob. And it's like, you know, Luke wants to do suicide by cop. And it just seems such a big topic and it's so badly handled that I just think, wouldn't it have been easier if they had just killed the Guardian off and had Luke escape with Ellie? Yes. You would have been writing Luke out early and potentially Ellie out as well. But I don't know. It just feels messy with this.
You know what I would have liked to see? If they did want to do this, let's say they did. They pulled the trigger and decided to go with their gut. The initial inertia of the Chosen falling and leaned into the anger and thought, fine, we got to quell the anger so that the city can heal. And yeah, they executed the Guardian. And then they had to deal with the ramifications of that. Because if everything that Amber is saying, the message apparently, is that for us to have a just society, we have to deal with our criminals in a just way. What she says to Maz, particularly in this episode, is that what happens mm-hmm. when, if you want the mob to decide, what happens when the mob come after you? You know, what if that was a consequence of killing the Guardian? You know, deciding to execute him for his crimes, whether or not he was aware of right and wrong. That's their debate. I'm not saying it's mine. Clearly, that's their debate, their question. Was he well enough to understand what he was doing was wrong and what's going to happen to him? Can he even possibly defend himself in a court of law? What if they decided to just go with it because they thought this is the only way to heal? This is the only way to move past this. It's too big for all of us. It's too big. And it is. It's too big for them to handle. And then that's why the mob ends up ruling things. Because they set the precedent. Like, if there was a consequence to this, then it could really work, you know? And then I think that would, the lesson they're apparently trying to convey to the audience, I think would come through because the audience would be able to see for themselves the consequence of ruling by mob justice. Mm, yeah. But again, I don't think they want to have this conversation. I feel like they want to jingle keys in front of us by teasing tough topics.
Yeah,
it's like in season two when they wanted to kind of tackle sexual assault, but in a couple days, everyone's over what, you know, Lex did to Celine. So it's fine. You know, what I mean? they wanted to dabble because it's exciting, but they didn't actually want to deal with the consequences that now you have a sex offender living in your building and no one's safe. So yeah, I just don't think they wanted to take any of this serious. They wanted to sweep it under the rug and it to be exciting and dramatic, but not have an actual discussion. And I know even young audiences who walked away from this being like, I don't even know what they were trying to say because they're all over the place. I don't know what the frickin' message is because it's contradictory. And again, the writers decide to pull the rug out. And, you know, like you could have done a story where the guardian is rehabilitated. Mm-hmm. And that could, again, push your message of this is why we don't just go with our gut and kill people because we're angry when it proves that he could be healed or he could become a better person or he could show remorse or whatever. But they didn't want to do anything thought-provoking with this. So, as for Ebony and Amber, I did like that. It felt a little bit like season two Ebony. She's already starting to work towards her next plan. She's been so passive this entire season, but this is the beginning of her working towards her next plan and doing it in a season two Ebony kind of way. Thoughtful, long game, carefully undermining Bray and Amber in a way that's like, I'm not even interested and your power. I'm not looking for that. I like how she shows herself as being completely disinterested in running the show, even though we know Ebony's never disinterested in running the show. I like that she was able to quell the mob. It makes sense for Ebony to be able to quell the mob, even though I still think this is a weak-ass mob. And I do think it shows Bray and Amber's hypocrisy that they have taken it upon themselves to make a decision on this subject, despite it being everybody's issue. And there are no city leaders involved. There's nobody else who fought involved. And again, who else fought? We don't know where they are. They all disappeared. But then they immediately get irked when Ebony steps up to the plate. Oh, so it's okay for you guys to tell everybody what's going to happen, but God forbid anybody else take authority and say what they think should happen and how to go about this. Hypocrites, both of you. You sicken me. I really like the way Ebony handled that. It felt classic Ebony, you know, and well done. Well done. I just think it's bad when I'm on the mob side. You know what I mean? Like, I am not on the side of the just characters because the story is being told so poorly.
Yeah.
That I'm not on their side. I'm on the side of the people who want pitchforks and, you know, like flames. Like, I shouldn't be on their side, but your storytelling is so bad.
Very.
I mean, what happened to democracy? Because Amber, Bray, they were very into democracy. Really, it should be a vote. People should vote for what they want to happen. There should be two options, you know.
People involved should definitely have a say in what happens.
Yeah.
I mean, all the city leaders should have a vote about what should be happening to the Guardian. As simple as that, but we can't have that.
But they can't do that, though, because they will vote for the punishment.
Yeah, but that's what we should have.
That's democracy.
Yeah, that's democracy.
Yeah. Yeah, but I mean, no. I mean, Amber and Bray know that will happen, so they can't have that vote, is what I mean.
See, but even that would have been a more interesting story. Them purposely not doing that because they know the outcome. That would have been something interesting, you know what I mean? But we don't get that. We don't get none of that. We get this, oh no, we can't punish the Guardian. Nothing at all. It's
like, oh, you guys seem so disappointed that you can't punish him. It looks like that's exactly what you wanted, you know? You didn't want any of this. You didn't want to be involved in any of this. And the showrunners didn't want Jaffa to be put on trial because they knew what it would, the only thing that would make sense is for him to be found guilty and punished. And so that's why they put in the softball of Luke being, because it's like, well, of course we don't have to punish Luke because we've got to see him being such a nice guy all throughout the season. And the fans will be fine if Luke isn't, punished. And it's just like, as Tamsin said, why tackle these topics if you don't actually want to deal with them? You could have had the Guardian run away, you know what I mean? And they just have to pick up the pieces of what's left and never get their justice. You could have just had that if you didn't want to deal with this, you know? But they're the ones who are like, ugh.
They could have just killed him off when they were going to explode the mall. They could have just done that then. He could have been pushed, or he could, you know, someone could have killed him. We could have had a shot of him dead on the floor.
Yeah, but that would have made him a martyr.
Yeah, and they could deal with that. They could deal with that. That would be an interesting storyline of, we didn't want this to happen, but the mob got away from us, and they got him. And now we have to deal with that. But they just didn't want to deal with it.
You guys have said every other storyline, it's just so much better than what we got. so many other ways this could have gone. It's so much better.
I mean, even if he'd actually died in the mall, you could easily have put his body, you know, like what happens later on. They could have had his body on display with that cart thing and wheeled it through the city so that everybody could come out and see the Guardian is dead.
That's a bit gruesome, Tamsin.
No, but you know what I mean? I mean, like, just wheel him along. He's in the coffin, is what I'm saying.
That was a very Carlin suggestion.
I was going to say, that's very, very Lex.
No, I just mean, you know what? We've got that coffin earlier. You could have put him in the coffin and put it on the car and just wheeled it through so that people could see that he was dead, so that there's no one can then say he's somewhere else. He's planning something somewhere else. That you can't get a resurgence. And on the other side, justice, he is dead. Nobody knows exactly how he died, but we can all move on because he's gone. Is what I'm trying to say.
Let's sidestep to Lex and Tyson.
Look, I'm sorry. Last night I said some things I shouldn't have. I don't want to leave you. You know that. No matter what happens, we're still husband and wife, aren't we?
Nothing's happened. All I did was care for someone who was hurting.
You sure about that?
What do you mean?
Well, that time you two were together, you didn't fall for him just a little bit?
Lex, how can you say that? He's just a helpless child.
He might have had some sort of breakdown, but he's still a monster as far as I'm concerned.
Right now, I'm not at all sure who the monster is.
So yeah, is Lex justified with his behavior in this episode? And what do you make of Tyson's reactions to this?
I don't think he was justified in attacking May, especially since May and Luke are like two of the only chosen who actually tried to make up for their participation with the chosen. Mm-hmm. Okay, and tried to prove that I'm not a terrible person. I want to do what's right. And so I don't think May deserved it. But I do think they're missing the forest for the trees here. Again, they're turning it into a black and white issue of if you're a good person, you'll just move on and you won't show any emotion towards these people who enslaved you, separated you from your loved ones, killed people. If you're a good person, you won't address that. You'll just move on. You'll be the better person. And if you're a bad person, you'll be upset about it. And I don't like that, because Lex has every right to be upset. He's allowed to be mad at people who betrayed them and screwed them over, especially when he was living, as far as he was concerned, he was at the top of his life. He had just got married. He had just realized, I'm in love. I have found the person I want to be with. Life is great. And it all came crashing down because a family member betrayed them. He's allowed to be upset, but basically it's like you have to be one or the other. You're not allowed to be someone who's mad and needing to express that. No, is he doing it in a healthy way? But they're not really given an outlet to deal with their anger. They're basically being told, you're a Jedi, you have no emotions, you know? And I'm like, that's not going to help the situation by telling people they have to shut down this very logical response to what they've all gone through. And all the moral characters are like, you're not allowed to be upset. And all the moral characters aren't upset, which is very annoying. Mm. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
That they're the ones, we're supposed to be on their side. And it's like, you're not upset about anything. All the people who died, you feel nothing for your family members who are confirmed as dead by the chosen. And you don't understand the rage. You can't relate to that. You know, I just don't like the way it's turned into this black or white. If you feel something, then you're just as bad as the bad guys. And if you don't feel anything, that means you're the morally upstanding voice of reason. And so it does bother me that that's how Lex and Tyson have been juxtapositioned against each other. Mm-hmm. Like, Tyson feels absolutely nothing except annoyed that her husband doesn't see her side of things. And Lex is the bad guy for being angry and
being upset about what the frick was going on between she and the Guardian. And if Tysan, you know your relationship with the Guardian makes your husband uneasy, and yet I'm beginning to feel like you're rubbing that relationship in his face because you're stubborn and you're mad that he's not seeing your side of things. So you're just two people who are pissed off at the other because you don't agree on this. And I don't care about this conversation anymore.
I mean, as a Lex Tysan shipper, I mean, make of that what you want. It's very problematic. I can say that they've kind of been having the same argument, but different alliterations of it since season one, when they first slept together. And the button that is always pushed is that Tysan is emotionless and that Lex needs to just get on board with certain things and just deal with that. And it's interesting because we had that breakthrough in season two where Tysan did actually admit, yes, I am sorry, I did treat you terribly. And that was really interesting. And now it feels like we've gone right back to the start again of where they were. The fact that he just cannot deal with this. And she cannot deal with him not being able to deal with this. I kind of see it from both of their positions. I see it from his side, like you said, Liz. I mean, you so eloquently put together what Lex's problem really is. But I can also see it from Tysan's side. She's already said that they've not slept together and she is not in love with him, the Guardian. In a way, that should be enough, because the reason why I say that is because what does Lex want from this conversation? She's telling him the truth. She's saying, no, I'm not in love with him. And even if I am, it's not in the way that you think. I care for him, but not in the way of love. It's not like that. I feel deeply sorry for this troubled human being. I have never had sexual relations with that man. How many times can she say this? She can only... They're kind of arguing each other, but they're arguing into nothingness.
Yeah.
She can only ever say, I never did that thing. And he can only say, did you do that thing? It feels like, again, the writers have picked up this ball and, again, don't know what to do with it.
Yeah.
We're having the same argument over and over again. There will be no outcome where their position changes. So at this point, you do find yourself thinking, why are you two doing this to each other? Why don't you just take some time apart? Because Tysan hasn't got a time machine where she can jump in it and change everything that she did. I'm sure she wishes she did, but she doesn't have that. And without that, Lex cannot move on from this. And
just to jump in a little bit, in Lex's defense, it's not just the past behavior, it's that she still continues to care for him.
It's the present behavior. Yeah, that's what I said.
Tysan is like, though. And I do agree. I have sympathy for Lex, don't get me wrong. I feel sorry for where he's coming from and I appreciate where he's coming from. But this same argument that they're continuing to have is just the same argument that they've always had.
Like, I think it's realistic. It is a conflict that there doesn't seem to be, they haven't reached the compromise, which they will, which I do like. But they're right here. The emotions are very high and they're both on the defensive. Mm-hmm. And I even understand why Tysan is absolutely disgusted with what he did to May. It is a cruel thing he did to May, even though she had no problem being nasty to May for no freaking reason, but whatever. I do see it. I'm tired of the same conversation. Even though it is realistic that they would still be talking in circles around each other at this point because they're so upset. And it's like you're no longer hearing what the other person is saying. You know what I mean? You're not even listening. You're just waiting for your turn to respond. You know, and yeah, you just need some time, some space. And there's no comfort in the other person. You're not finding comfort in your partner. You're not finding understanding in your partner. And they are young. So while I'm not like, oh, this doesn't make sense or blah. I'm tired of it already. I feel like there are more interesting things they could be saying to each other. Maybe if the writers were more creative or, you know, had more interest, they could be saying more interesting things
even though it's the same topic, but they're just saying the same things to each other. And
you know what would have worked for me? If Lex would have gone on about the other things the Guardian did wrong, you know, and not just focus on the he stole my wife kind of thing, because that's how he's behaving as a jealous husband. I would have liked it if Lex would have even tried to bring up Brian on the list of all the things that happened because of the Guardian.
It's like they're just better arguments that both of them could be making. Like, I love that you said that, because you're pointing out other things they could be saying to each other to point out why they feel the way they do about this person. Like, if Lex wants to point out horrible things about the Guardian, the list is endless. That he could, but he keeps labeling the same things, the same broad, vague thing. And Tysanne, same thing. She has great arguments she could make towards Lex to make him empathize with this psychopath, but she's not using them. You know what I mean? And it's just like, I'm tired of hearing you say the same things when you definitely have better arguments you could be making about each other's past behavior or the past behavior of someone you're angry at to try to justify why you do what you do, on and on, you know. And yeah, in the heat of a moment, you're not going to think of them, but we keep revisiting the argument. You would have had time to think about what you'd like to say, because that's what you do when you're mad at your partner. When round one is over, you retreat to your corner of the ring and you think about everything you should have said if you weren't derailed by your emotions. And when you come back to round two, you've got those things on lock. You've got all the new things you want to say. They've got the new things they want to say. You split round three. Like, you keep coming back with new accusations or new arguments, not the same one.
I would also add, this could have been a really good opportunity for us to learn something about Tysanne, where we actually find out why she has this need to help people in this certain way that she could have opened up to Lex at some point.
Yeah, but the writers still don't know why Tysanne does what she does.
It's just such a missed opportunity, and it doesn't help that she's still wearing the Supreme Mother outfit. I mean, that doesn't help at all. That she's essentially branded herself the Guardian's wife, the Supreme Mother, and I mean, just take the clothes off, Tysanne.
And she's still in that room that was decorated specially for her. Like, her husband made sure that room was decorated for her.
Yeah,
and not her actual husband, but her psycho husband.
Tysanne would have an argument the size of the Bible if Lex was coming at me. You know what I mean? Like, there's just so many things I could fling at him, even as the partner I love, you know, to explain why I feel everybody deserves forgiveness. Let's look at your list of sins, buddy boy, since the day I met you. And you have proven that you can be a better person because you were given chances to become a better person. I feel like some of the things that she tries to do to compare him to the Guardian are really lame. Like, he's got bigger crimes, Tysanne, you could definitely use to compare the two of them. You know, him throwing molasses on someone isn't nice. It's pretty crappy, but you cannot use that to compare to what the Guardian did to people. You can't use that as your argument for, you know what I mean? Like, it's not the same. Why don't you talk about him physically assaulting Celine? Like talk about some real things he's actually done. The fact that he has also taken a life, might have been an accident, but he totally did. You know what I mean? Like, talk about things he wanted to be forgiven for, you know? And if you want, I mean, I'm not saying I would fall in line with that thinking. I'm just saying, if you're gonna make an argument where you want him to find any sort of empathy with someone like the Guardian, you have got to read him to rights. You got to read him for filth, okay? In order for him to see, okay, I have done some messed up things. I wouldn't want my feet held to the fire for those things, you know? But yeah, I just wish they had been more creative in their writing so that we weren't hearing the same argument. Because you can disguise people having the same argument, you know, and they're not even trying. They're just saying the exact same thing to each other this episode that they said last episode and the episode before that. And that's not how arguments progress. They feel repetitive because you're still arguing about the same thing, but you are saying new things about it.
Just because we had a little thing together doesn't mean that you have any special rights or privileges. I'm certainly not going to come running every time you snap your fingers. Got it?
So yeah, what do you make of the developments here between Alice and Ned?
Way to go, Alice. That guy clearly needed to be put in his place. And I'm glad she actually told him that just because that this happened once doesn't mean you can expect it to happen again. I was actually very happy that she did tell him that.
Thing at everybody, I mean, I'm not sure if adolescent boys go through this, but I do know adolescent girls do. When you finally jump the gun, you finally say, okay, I'm taking this step with my partner. One of the first things you learn is that back in the day before you gave up the pony, nobody expected it. They were still, they're still working for it. They were still putting in the work because it wasn't a given that it would happen. And then after, you notice a change in the behavior. You notice that it's now an expectation that it's going to be the dessert of the meal. And I remember going through it as a teenage girl and talking to my friends about, we really didn't like that feeling, that there was a sense of not even knowing if you were allowed to say no anymore because you already had, you know, and it was a lesson you had to learn growing up that no, it doesn't matter. You are always allowed to say no. You are always, it should never be an expectation regardless of how many times it's happened. So I do like that. I think a young audience definitely needs to hear that. I think it's super important to know that you know is always on the table, you know, and I like the fact that, you know, granted, there is no reason on earth Alice should expect respect from him considering who he is. Like, did you not know, figure out who he was this whole time? But if we ignore all that, I do like the shades of Alice showing that she was hoping to be shown some respect and even a little romance from this person who claimed to be interested in her and going on about her eyes. And he was working so hard for it before. Think of all the things he was saying, you know, and now it's just a given. He shows up with alcohol and she's like, I thought maybe for a crazy second you'd brought me flowers, you know. But my favorite part, aside from those two, my favorite part is the comparison of Lex and Ned. And I think this is so important. When people go on about Ned, but how much they love Lex, and even though we know it's because Lex is written much better, Lex and Ned are so similar. And all I could think was, if Ned had been a typically handsome guy, so many of his sins would be ignored by a young female audience, even a young male audience who want to be him. Because think of how disgusting Lex was, you know, and yet it's like so many people didn't acknowledge how disgusting a person Lex actually was because he was cute. He was beautiful. Absolutely. Look at Jay. Jay is a garbage person, but he is beautiful. Okay. And how many of your young audience ignore that? But Ned is not typically handsome. He looks like he acts. And so that's exactly what the young audience sees. They see the garbage person because he looks like a garbage person, you know? And I just really liked that moment of those two being the same guy. You know what I mean? Bonding over the same kind of cruelty over May. You know, women are women be crazy. Let's have a drink. Let's drink it out. Even passed out on the floor in the morning. People have to walk over them both. They're the same guy, except one of them was hit with a good DNA stick. You know what I'm saying? And so he's got that pretty privilege. I really love that moment.
I really liked Ned's monologue about how creepy the mall was at night and how it used to be. Because I thought it was really well acted.
Mm-hmm.
I got the sense, I could picture all of the things that Bevin was trying to conjure with his words. I thought it was a really well written monologue. And I also have a personal experience of this. So before I went to university, I worked in a shopping centre and we had to do some decorating in the shop unit. And they closed the shop. They closed the whole of the mall. So it was just me and this other girl and we were just painting the unit. And honestly, it was terrifying when you stepped outside of our unit and you were in the darkened mall, because you kept expecting people to be there all the time and there was no one there. And it felt like, I don't know if it's the same for you, but over here, you know, if you ever have like a parents' evening at school, you'll go to the school with your parents. And a school when there are no kids there is really freaky. And it's the same. It was the same feeling in the shopping centre. It was like, is this, I'm actually afraid. And I just think he painted that really well, where he said, you know, it's kind of creepy here at night. And it's like,
Bevan's performance is really
good. Yeah, Ned, it is. I do wonder, though, I just wonder if that was actually the monologue he read when he was auditioning.
Who knows?
I just wish we got this kind of writing for him from the moment he showed up. These little insights to deeper thoughts deeper feeling for the things going on around him. Because we're getting it now, and yet I can't forget that first leg of the journey with him.
Mm.
It's really hard, you know. It's like they did him an injustice in the same way they screwed Danny over. You know, first impressions are everything. They really matter, you know, and you have a few first interactions to really show the audience who this character could possibly be, as well as who they are right now. You know, you got to show their potential in little sparks, and you got to show where they're stuck, you know. And I feel like these thoughtful moments, even though his problem is that he thinks he was entitled to get some, show something. You know, they at least show a thought process and the way he takes this rejection. He really doesn't get it. You know, he doesn't understand. And he thought this girl liked him. He doesn't get it. It just shows that there's somebody under all of this, you know. And yeah, I just wish we'd been getting that from the very start.
I mean, I also like the bit when we get into what happens in the trial and he whoops and he's like, yeah. And then he looks over at Alice.
Should probably keep that to myself.
And he's like, oh, okay. Maybe that wasn't good. And it's like when he says, oh, I've tactically done this a little bit wrong. But it's like when he said, oh, mate, that poor girl, she didn't deserve that. And you're thinking, you'll say anything.
Like, it's like those little moments show him as an actual person who is willing to say things to the girl he likes. I mean, Lex did the same exact things, you know, and yet what this person, he's willing to say what he actually thinks, you know what I mean? Like, it makes you ask yourself, which one does he really believe? But it makes him a deeper person, you know, with a thought process and feelings and reactions, you know, and rather than just a cartoon. And
you know what? That comparison to Lex actually helps me make more sense of why on earth Alice would fall for him. You know, he might not have the looks, but character-wise, he's so much like Lex. And let's not forget, Alice has a weird taste in men. And as he said herself, she always falls for the wrong guys.
Well, it's not just Lex there, is it? I mean, I think there's probably a list of guys that she's fallen for, but she definitely likes a fixer-upper.
If that's the case, it would actually make sense, you know. I still think they did a lousy job, like, no matter what. Even if we can justify reasons why she'd be attracted to both Lex or Ned, they still did a crappy job getting her to a place where it's believable that she'd fall for him. Because, like, he just doesn't show her enough good for her to react the way she does in the time that she does. Again, this is a guy who put his hands on her. He showed her, I am willing to throw hands, not because I'm defending myself, but because you made me mad because you were right in an argument. I'm willing to assault your sister, to sexually harass her. And that's what she saw of this guy. I'm not willing to work with anybody. I'm a slob. I sit on my butt doing nothing. I don't even take care of my brother and sister. And all you have to do is dig a tunnel with him for 24 hours. And suddenly he's dating material. You know what I mean? It's just like, that wasn't enough. They still did a crappy job. You'll never convince me otherwise.
Sorry, it sounded like you were just describing like season one.
That's why I said they're the same person. And it just blows. I think it's wild that it's not noticed in the fandom more, the kind of net hate Ned gets, when it's like, I really believe 100% if he was prettier, he wouldn't get that much hate. Oh, he'd still get plenty of people who would call him out as they got older and started to see the toxicity in him, in the same way people grew up and saw the toxicity in Lex. But he would have a fair more people being like, yeah, but, you know, because that pretty face removes a lot of sins.
Some were, I think.
You think? But you were in charge. You gave out the artists.
We had people taking care of that stuff. Look, the truth is, I don't want to know.
But you did know. You knew what was going on and you did nothing to prevent it.
I knew.
How did the panel react to the trial itself and the themes being raised here?
Can I just say, we had that discussion about Ned and Lex, and I think this is a perfect example of what you, Liz and Sabine were talking about. Because all of the things that Luke did, Jay did, but Amber and Ebony were like, no, that's fine, because we both in your heart and want to have relations with you of a carnal nature. Nobody apart from Ellie wants to do that with Luke, even though we know that he later becomes Tom Hardy's stunt double. And if they had known that, they might have thought differently. They might have been a bit like, now wait, because he can introduce us to Tom Hardy, so we'll keep Luke alive. Okay. But it's interesting because it perfectly demonstrates what both Liz and Sabine and Lance have said, which is how hypocritical people can be when there is a pretty face involved.
I wish this setup for his trial had been done so much better, because there is a poignancy to what happens in this trial. Okay, even though, again, I don't like the way that Mallrats have handled almost anything dealing with the Chosen, the fact that Luke is someone who has done and participated in terrible, terrible things and does not deny that. He has remorse, but he admits his guilt and he's willing to take whatever punishment you throw down on him, even if it's just to put him out of his own misery so he doesn't have to live with this guilt anymore. And he offers no excuses. He tries to explain. I love that he says, I don't know, and then admits, I didn't want to know. Like, that is so honest, that moment. Like, that's the real answer. I didn't want to know. You know what? I didn't want to face what we were doing to people and then did nothing to stop it. You know what I mean? Like, that is an honest moment after trying to say, I didn't know. Other people were in charge. Like, that's skirting around because you don't want to face your own guilt and then just owning it. I did know, but I didn't want to know. And I closed my eyes to the suffering that we were causing other people and telling myself it was okay. I love all that. The fact that, you know, what Ellie says, and that there isn't much of a reaction, but it makes sense that she would say it and fight for him and point out the things we have seen him do, the things he tried to do, the fact he didn't try to run. You know what I mean? I like what Amber is saying, that she totally believes he's guilty. He did these crimes. I like how she compliments Ebony. Well done, the way she did that. But also the way she says, I believe he is also remorseful, you know, and then the way her judgment on him, the poignancy this could have had if you could contrast it to other Chosen trials. Like, if we had been given the story that other Chosen are being put on trial, it doesn't all have to happen in the Mall and we don't have to see them all, but it could be in the dialogue. We could be hearing about Chosen trials. And, you know, depending on the case, Chosen who were being found guilty, Chosen who were being executed for their part. You know, if you don't want to use other Chosen, just use the Praetorian Guards. You introduce them, now freaking use them for something. But show that there are Chosen going down all over the city. Don't let the Mallrats be the only ones running trials. Because what is to stop other tribes from running Chosen trials with other Chosen who are out in the street? The only Chosen are the Guardian and Luke. They're the ones in the Mall, but they exist everywhere. Other tribes would get their hands on them. If we could hear about these trials, one would amp up the tension of the stakes of what would happen if you put Luke and the Guardian on trial. If you're hearing about what's happening to other Chosen, okay?
And then for her to give him this kind of punishment, I think would really push the button on the lesson they were trying to teach their audience about compassion and recognizing guilt and remorse. But they don't. So in a way, this falls flat. I'm just like, this could have been great. This could have been great. And because these are the only chosen we deal with, you kind of already knew this was going to happen. There are no stakes, really, because we don't see any other chosen falling or having to face the consequences of what they did. Luke is basically the only one. But if you could contrast that with other chosen getting strung up, or you just hear about them being taken out because they were found guilty, then you'd really, really feel the pressure on what's going to happen to a chosen who admits their guilt, you know?
Mm-hmm. I just want to say bravo, Liz, because I would have watched the hell out of that. I mean, I also think you can expand further on those ideas that you've put forward by saying that as they slowly begin to run out of chosen to actually punish the mob, that will they start turning their attention to people like Trudy, people like Tyson, who were figureheads recognisable. So, I mean, there's that element as well that, I mean, Amber and Bray are not, well, we're told they're not morons. We're not shown that. But we're told they're not. And your thought process would eventually go to, they are running trials. They are grabbing anyone who was complicit in anything, who had anything to do with this. And they're putting them on trial. And we've got at least 5 people in this building who were involved. And yeah, I mean, that's another element that adds to the stakes. But bravo, Liz.
Thank you.
I would watch that.
I just have to say, I just really appreciated the fact that they did ask Luke these questions, you know? And that we did get to see the fact that Luke admits he didn't want to know. Whereas, you know, later on with Jay, we get a, oh no, I wasn't aware of that. It's like, yeah, Jay, you were.
I just wish there'd been more familiar faces at this trial. It just seems like very random who is allowed to witness this trial. And again, I'm like, where are all those freaking leaders that we had to go talk to and convince to fight with us? They don't have anything to say about this.
These are the people that should be there.
Yeah, this is like the trial of the century, but you traded them all in for Maz. Don't get me wrong. She's fabulous. But like, seriously, until this, she has never existed before this. We don't even know what her stakes are. We don't know what happened to her, you know, her story, her tribe, what the chosen, how that she's just a face of the mob. And it's like, where are the people we were fighting to find to fight with us? The people who had the real stories of the chosen burning their villages to the ground. Where are they? Where is Jet? You know, like, where are they?
Yeah, or if they at least would have shown us what had happened to Moses' tribe.
Something. I think that's why I think there should have been other trials happening in the city. You know, different mobs going to different places, demanding justice, because it just doesn't make sense that this is the group. This is the city. You're telling me this group represents the city that wants justice, and this is the only place they could possibly get it for the chosen? You can't find chosen on the street to stone. Are you kidding me?
Yeah, apparently they don't recognize them without their blue robes.
But that also doesn't work, because later on people are going to be recognizing chosen collaborators into season 4 and 5.
Oh, I just hate this whole trial. I hate this whole storyline.
There are a lot of trials in the tribe. I was just thinking, the first time that I ever recorded with you guys, it was Danny's trial.
Yeah, there are a lot of trials. There are a lot of trials in this show. They love a trial.
This is definitely the worst one, though.
No, this isn't worse than The Guardian putting Luke and Celine and Tally on trial. Come on, you have to admit, that was ridiculous.
I mean, yeah, that was ridiculous, but this is worse because of the judgment and because of everything surrounding it. It's just nonsense.
Jaffa wasn't meant to be sane.
Yeah, if we're going to go that way, then yeah, he wasn't meant to be sane, so it's fine. We have a sane person, supposedly, leading this. It's just nonsense.
It just, once again, is them trying to shrink down the world. A world that used to be so vast. And our heroes were literally aliens in the world, just trying to navigate it. Mm. And it's like, now they run this world. You know, they can shape it any friggin' way they want. There's, because nobody else has agency in this world.
You know, they're just extras that pop in to the lives of our heroes, and they don't do anything outside of our heroes, you know, and it's just detrimental to the storytelling and the world building.
Yeah, because they essentially all act like NPCs. Eva Moss, she's an NPC. She's a great one. But yeah, I completely agree.
It's not the worst. You guys know how I feel about, like, the water trial. But I'm not going to lie. The lead up to it and, of course, how it concludes are terrible. And I do like the minutia of the middle of it. And I don't know if it's just because I like the performances. Maybe that's it. Maybe it's just the small little details that I really enjoy. Mm. Maybe it's just Luke. I like his performance. You know, I like the things he's admitting up there and what he's saying. I like Ebony. You know what I mean? He's got the confidence of a serial killer because she knows he's going down, you know? Like, but yeah, it's the surrounding parts are pretty messy. They're just, you know, and I just, this could have been so much better. But nope, Luke is the only chosen. The only chosen that existed. And this is going to give you justice. Are you freaking serious? Like, if I was one of the kids who'd suffered in this city under the chosen, I wouldn't even care about this one. I would be dogging people in the street because I'm a psychopath. I'm sorry. Like, if I'd gone through what these kids claim they went through under the chosen regime, where pregnant women in my village are literally being taken, otherwise we'll all be burnt to the ground, you know, where my leader's been murdered. People have been shipped off to mines. Mine what? Who knows? But I am not going to wait on this one group to give me justice. I'd be out in the streets, okay? These are supposed to be street kids. Are you kidding me? This is where they're going to get their justice, and this is what's going to satisfy them? I don't buy it. I don't buy it at all. The chaos that would ensue would be reminiscent of season one, okay? Kids would have commandeered those chosen vans. You know, it would be all out chaos out in those streets. Okay. The way kids would react to this. The mall rats would have no power to quell it.
Yeah, and that would feed back in to what went on in season two when the mall rats tried to run the show and essentially ran into the ground and became as corrupt as everybody else. So they don't have a leg to stand on when it comes to being the purveyors of justice and democracy. So why would anyone listen to them? You're right. This is like the writers want us to feel a certain way. But again, we've gotten into the same territory we keep slipping back into, which is they are telling us and they are not showing us. We're Bella Swan in Twilight all over again.
Like, the only leg the Mallrats have to stand on is that they've got the most important person in the Chosen. You know, that's all. That's literally all they've got. That's their only card they have to play. If you're somebody who really wanted Jaffa, that's the only power play the Mallrats actually have. We captured him. This is our home. We've got him imprisoned. So if you want justice for him, you have to follow our rules. But anybody else, any other chosen, I mean, clearly Luke wasn't the only chosen guard running havoc. We saw plenty of them in the beginning who enjoyed being cruel and doing things to people. And you're telling me that they wouldn't be recognized out there? People wouldn't find them and have their own show trials? Or screw the trial. They would be putting these kids on the stake, you know?
Come on, they would have gone after Trudy ages ago.
That's the thing. I would love to have seen that. Like, just trying to protect someone like Trudy or other chosen collaborators that live in your home, because I just don't see this mob only focusing on one or two chosen, and that's the only ones they want. And it's like, you have half of the chosen living with you now, and nobody's interested in them. Nobody.
Or even having chosen denouncing collaborators in trials, where we find out that there were a bunch of chosen that have essentially said, oh, they were, you know, like, we've got that scene from Harry Potter and we've got that trial and it's Barty Crouch Jr. You know, let's really lean into it. Let's have people who've got blue hair, because obviously that's another sign to recognise the chosen blue boy. Let's have that. Let's have people rolling over on each other. You know, because that's what would happen.
That would make the world even more terrifying. And you could understand the Mallrats not wanting to fall into that same chaos trap as everybody else.
Mm.
because out there, there is no real justice. They can't control what everybody else is choosing to do. The only card they have to play is they do have the Guardian. You know, they have Luke, who's the commander in charge, you know, and that's the only thing they can handle. That's the only thing they've got in their pocket, you know, and yeah, it just would raise the stakes for everyone of how dangerous this could be if we do not tiptoe around this and handle it perfectly.
Can I also add, watching this, it feels like Ebony was born to be on Fox News. Does anyone else get that vibe? You know, she just exudes that Judge Judy, yes, an executioner vibe. And I just really wanted her to wear those robes that she had worn for Danny's trial. You know, it was like, come on, give us the, you know, but yeah, she just exudes. I should be an anchor woman for Fox News, to me.
If nothing else, I just want the mob to be more unruly. I want the mob to be dangerous. I want the mob to be an actual threat that can't be quelled by a couple of gentle sentences from someone like Amber. Bray and Amber should not be able to safely stand out there and talk to these people. You know, I want a real mob that's like, we're taking him. You know, like, if that's the only thing you're going to show me, that this is the mob, this is the city kids, that's what I want to see. Sad. The older the actors get, the lamer they get at depicting this world.
Yeah, that leads us directly on to the punishment itself.
Luke will go free to live with the knowledge of what he's done for the rest of his life. Go free? What do you mean, go free? His punishment is to live with his crimes and his conscience.
So yeah, panel, I hate all of this. What do you make of this verdict by Amber? And that yet again, the Morats believe that they can get away with the abuse of their power.
Well, picking up something Liz said earlier in the conversation, which was when Liz mentioned about the fact that Luke is in a cage made by his own guilt, basically, and that in a way he wants this to end because he can't carry this around anymore. And he's going for suicide by cop because he cannot cope with this. So on that side of things, I think he should live in that cage. He should be made to live in that cage because you're kind of doing what he's still running the narrative. He's still got control because he wants to be punished. He wants this to end. And not ending it for him and making it go on and on, and for him to always know what an awful person he actually is, and the fact that he is complicit in so many people's deaths and that he can never escape that. For me, yeah, that should be his punishment.
No, that's...
But not in this way, not to go free. I mean, he'll never be free. That's the thing. He will never be free from this. He'll have to walk around with this forever. But I do think in this situation, which was a no-win situation, because I don't think Amber for one second thought about how dangerous her saying again, life imprisonment or free to go, you know, in this case, to go free, was to the rest of her tribe, because they're the ones that are going to now have targets on their backs because of this decision that she's making. So I wonder if it had been easier for them to say, we're going to pronounce him guilty, we're going to schedule an execution, but what we're not going to do is follow through on the execution. We're going to invite everybody to a big peace festival. Oh, isn't it wonderful that the Chosen are gone, and in 2 days' time we're going to have Luke's execution. All the mole rats are going to be there but one, Ellie. We're going to give her the key to the cage. We're going to say, you've got 20 minutes to get out of here. You can't take anything with you. You just have to leave. That way, Luke is gone. He escaped. Ellie, let him out. That's not our fault. We were at the party. We didn't for one second think that one of our own would ever betray us like that. And it's not like Trudy Mark II, but that's one thing you could have done, which is, yeah, admittedly, it means Ellie is leaving. But at the same time, it's a get out of jail free card. And if they can't get him out of the mall, at least they tried. if that makes sense. But as it stands, it's just she's put targets on all of the mall rats' backs. The minute they step outside, they're just in danger of being lynched as all of the Chosen. And they don't think about that for a minute. But passing the judgment on Luke, but never actually doing it, allowing him to escape when they've all got alibis. They were all at the party. Everyone was there. Everyone saw them. They saw how shocked they were that this had even happened. And you could have even had a thing where Ellie got so far and then she changed her mind. She said, look, I can't come with you, but just run. And that's it. But yeah, that's my, I'm going to get off my soapbox now.
As always for me, it's the setup that ruins it. You know, I don't think for a second I was concerned that Luke was actually going to be punished in any real way, any significant way, considering how season three has been. There's been a reluctance to pull the trigger on anything substantial. You know, I mean, Tyson got shot and all she got was a bump on the head. She got shot with an arrow and they didn't even want to commit to what that could have been, you know, and her husband finds out she's alive after thinking she was dead for 2 days. Just in an offhand conversation with no impact of what that means. They haven't wanted to go deep on anything, so I really wasn't concerned for Luke. They were trying very hard to set the stage for, oh my gosh, he's going to be found guilty, he's going to be in so much trouble. But I was like, Luke is going to be fine. They're not killing this kid off. I didn't believe it for a second. Now, if it had been season one, I would have been worried for Luke, but or even maybe season two, but season three, I was not. He was a safe bet to put Luke on trial. It was super safe. That's why they ushered the Guardian out of the line of fire and put Luke in there. He was a safe choice to let go, you know, because he had proven himself to be a decent human being. They were never going to truly punish this guy. But if the setup had been done better, I feel like, again, I think their message that they're attempting to give their young audience is about mercy, leniency, and recognizing remorse and rehabilitation in people, blah, blah, blah. But again, there's nothing to contrast the threat that Luke is under. There's no other Chosen being put down, where if there had been, then the reality that that could actually happen to Luke if he's found guilty would have felt a little more real. And if in that moment, in that situation where Luke is basically being in a city surrounded by Chosen just like him, being put on trial, being found guilty, being executed, being put into slave labor or whatever these people have decided to how they're going to punish the old Chosen, Amber making this decision of mercy to let him go free to live with his guilt would have had way more poignancy. I'm not saying I agree with her choice. I'm just saying that as a storyteller and impact you're trying to have and the message you're trying to tell would have mattered so much more that she was willing to do that given the opposition and what could come raining down on them. But this setup, it's too safe, it's too obvious, and it's kind of dumb. Like as Tamsin said, you just put a target on your back because you guys are clearly the only ones dealing with the Chosen. Nobody else has taken it upon themselves to punish, discipline, or put Chosen on trial. So you have made yourself the authority. So this is a really stupid decision. I also think not even parole, probation, jailed for a little while, you know, just to make sure he really means it and he's not going to be a danger. Like, This was lazy. I could have even bought it if there was a conversation where Amber just admitted, I don't want to punish any of the Chosen. Because it seems clear to me you don't. It seems very clear to me that this is not something you're interested in. So if you just admitted that, I might buy all of this. I might if there was actually a conversation about that and why you don't want to punish the Chosen for whatever reason. You know, maybe it's something to do with your sister and what the cult did to her, you know, and how you had to watch her find her way back, and maybe your sister admitted to doing things when she was in the cult, you know, and before she found her way back. Just anything. But this is flat. This doesn't work for me.
I hate it. it doesn't make no sense to me. Amber, has all this sympathy for the Chosen and for Luke, who she knows nothing about. It makes no sense how she'd come to this verdict. I just hate it. I hate all of it.
A year ago, they had more stringent standards on how they were going to handle Jack during his food stealing trial. That was only about a year ago in their lifespan, you know, and they were more practical about that situation. Even though they were only a year younger, they made more sense in what they were talking about there. They took his betrayal of stealing food that everybody needed. And even then, they made more sense. Even what Amber was saying, there needs to be a punishment to deter anybody from doing this, but it can't be something we'll regret because remember, Jack is important and needed in this tribe. That made way more sense. That was only a year ago.
Mm-hmm.
Mm. It almost feels like a Dany pronouncement. You know what I mean? Like something she'd say in one of her little courts. It's just weird. I don't get it.
Mm. It just feels like we didn't want to deal with them. We didn't want to deal with them. And now it's over. You know, we don't want responsibility. Because that's how they behaved this entire time. Bray and Amber have shown no concern of what to do with the Chosen wrap-up.
Mm.
And they haven't shown any interest in the Chosen wrap-up. And when it's been brought to their attention, they have basically been like, if we dealt with everybody who was with the Chosen, the cells would be full. And it's just like, there are some criteria. You know what I mean? Like, we're not talking about punishing every single person who was with the Chosen. You know, we're talking about the head honchos, the people who are actually guilty of something. And you didn't want to deal with any of it. But of course, that's why Amber's the magistrate, y'all.
Mm.
It's so that the narrative can be like, see, this was totally the right way to handle this because Amber said so.
Mm-hmm.
That's why she's in the hot seat, you know, like conveniently in the hot seat. Of course, she doesn't want to be there. But come on, give me a break. Do you think Amber would have sat this one out?
But it's just by doing this, the writers again put Bray and Amber in a position of being A, morons, and B, it's just, like you say, their lack of, it's that lack of inertia that has haunted the whole of this season. Like they didn't want to, they went on all those walking tours and talks. You know, they did their TED Talks to get all these tribe leaders to come and back them. And once they had them, they did nothing with them. They didn't strike while the iron was hot and defeat the Chosen earlier. No, it's this lack of inertia that's just taken over this whole season where it's like, oh, well, it'll be what it is. And it just gets so tiring. After a while,
basically the only people who are still upset over what happened are people we're not supposed to side with. It's just incredibly lazy way to wrap things up, you know, because you don't feel like dealing with the problem you created.
And this is the thing as well, because like something we've mentioned on the podcast many, many times, we can still get to the same outcome but in a better way. Like for example, we could have had Bray making the decision because it's based on the tribal. His brother was his memory was twisted and stuff. He could have made the pronouncement that you're going to live with this guilt, and you know me, and he would have come across in a better way. But rather than yeah, it's fine, live with your guilt, go on, move on. It would have felt better. It's still the same outcome, but it would have felt better if it had come in from a different source. But pushing it from the whole Amber, it just makes it the whole situation look just even more silly.
And why do they take that judgment? Why do the mob just go, oh yeah, fine, and we're not happy, we're going to threaten you, but we're not going to march over, drag him out of the cage and then do our own justice to him? You know, like Moz, do you honestly think that for 1 minute she's surrounded by her people, by her tribe, and Ebony is kind of on her side? There's loads of people in the mall that are kind of on her side. And you just think, even if Amber does make this pronouncement, it's almost as if the writers have forgotten that not everybody has signed up to this Bill of Rights. Because this goes back to the Bill of Rights again, doesn't it? Let's be honest. And the idea that they're all just going to obey this. I mean, they were a baying mob outside. You let them in. And you can't tell me that there aren't people still up against that grill listening. And it only takes them to kind of break the grill down, to grab Luke, and for it to become a bloodbath again. And we don't have that either. It's just like, well, I am going to threaten you, but I'm also going to leave.
I actually think you made a very good point with reminding us of the Bill of Rights in this.
No, there's no Bill of Rights.
Because that's making me think.
That Amber knows nothing about.
that Amber knows nothing about, but it does make me wonder, you know, if the writers forgot that Amber and Danny aren't the same person.
They did.
Because Amber, being this magistrate, making this decision would have made so much more sense if she had had Danny's storyline in season two.
Well, let's be honest, Danny actually inherited Amber's storyline.
That's what I've been saying,
Let's be real.
Yeah, obviously.
It was actually Amber's storyline that they gave to Danny because Beth had gone. And I think the writers have completely forgotten that they shipped it over to Danny. Yeah. But this was obviously always something that they planned for Amber. And that's why this doesn't work, because it doesn't work.
It could have been interesting. If Amber, let's say Amber admitted that she didn't want to punish the Chosen, and she gives some reason, whether or not you agree with the reason, but she gives one, why she doesn't want to be a part of this, why she doesn't want to participate, and why she's not okay with punishing any of the Chosen, okay?
Mm.
And let's say it's a great reason, but even if it's not, she gives a reason. What if, strategically, we know Amber's smart, so what if strategically she just sentenced him to life in prison, right? It would please the crowd.
Mm.
He's guilty. And he's going to be put away. Justice is served. It's not like they have to stick by it. You know what I mean? It's not like people are going to come and visit the mall to see if Luke is still imprisoned.
Mm-hmm.
You know? No. Like, you give it a month and these people have forgotten about Luke.
Yeah.
And he could just slink out of the city and go live his life. Change his hair color. Barely be recognized by anybody. You know? Like, this is just dumb. And it doesn't have the impact the writers think it does, because they didn't give it the buildup it deserved to have an impact. It lands with a dull thud of stupidity when this could have been done in a much more clever way if you don't really want to punish these people for whatever reason. Like, just say you are. You know, nobody is going to be checking up. They're not doing prison checks. Okay? Within a month, these people have forgotten that you still have the guardian. No, they forget within a week that you still have the guardian, for Pete's sake. Okay? So they're going to forget about Luke. It's just give him some time to appease the crowd, to appease people who have been harmed, and then give him parole. Like, just, this is dumb. This is so, I'm so disinterested in this. She really was the worst person for this. Mm. I don't care what Bray's argument was for why she was the best person. I don't agree with you, Bray. She was the worst person for this.
She was. Actually, absolutely was. I don't understand that at all.
But you make a great point, Liz, about the parole. And we actually have, later on, Luke working for Ebony. That could have been part of his parole. And then we've got that whole storyline about him being a little bit complicit in what Ebony is doing, which kind of makes him conflicted because the mole rats put him on trial but then didn't execute him, sentence him to life imprisonment. I mean, that's interesting. That makes him conflicted again because he's slipping back into old habits, i.e. more powerful person is telling him what to do and he's kind of just doing it. And, but yeah, like, oh my God. It cannot be this hard.
Writing was better. This could definitely be painted as a hubris of young people who know just enough, but not enough. You know, because think about the decisions you made when you were a teenager. You were just smart enough to know things, but you were still an idiot, you know what I mean? Because you're a kid. And so there were things you made your decisions based on. They were based on your previous knowledge, what you had learned up until that point. And yet you still made really dumb decisions because you didn't know enough about the way the world works, you know? But of course, the writing isn't great. So this is it's stupid. And it doesn't have the impact they were hoping for because they didn't build up to it. Like, I feel like the writers have been smacking me in the face mm-hmm. for episode after episode of how tired they are of this storyline, you know? And it's like, well, if you're tired of it, how do you think I feel? And it feels like such a weak end. I mean, we already didn't get, like, a fight to deal with the Chosen after having to spend an entire season meandering around with them mm-hmm. and not really exploring them and ruining one of the best built-up villains we've ever gotten. And, like, now you're drawing out their demise in the most pathetic way possible, but it's not even on purpose. Mm. Like, oh my gosh. And knowing it gets worse? Like, how is it that this gets worse?
Yeah, you'd think this is the worst it gets. But
yeah. Like, it's like, okay, if we're going to be done with the Chosen, fine. Let's just be done with the Chosen. But you keep dragging out this Chosen storyline that you mm-hmm. clearly didn't want. And making it even worse when we could just be focusing on the rebuilding, you know, like, ugh.
All right, cool. That brings us to our final thoughts of the episode. So as Luke is taken back to the cage for his own safety, Ellie embraces him just as Jack returned to the mall. So yeah, what do you make of his expert timing?
Okay. You guys know that I don't blame Ellie for the attachment she formed with Luke and all of that. Like, it's just not fair to blame an enslaved person for developing this codependent, you know, toxic relationship with her enslaver who was actively pursuing her. Okay. But
yeah,
even though I don't blame Ellie for any of that, I don't consider it cheating. I can't deny when Jack pulled up. That was classic entertainment. The look on her face, the way she jumps back from Luke, it's just that part of me is like, have fun explaining this. Oh my gosh.
I just wanted to go back on something a little bit, and it was when Ellie and Alice were talking about, why did I fall in love with him? And Alice was like, well, you know, you're like me. And I'm thinking, no, she isn't like you. You forced her to do this. She has gotten into this Stockholm-like relationship with this man. And it's just your fault, Alice. Shrugging and going, you're just like me. No, she isn't. You took advantage of her, forced her into this. She is then, like you say, she was a slave and had no choice. He'd already threatened to kill her once. And that was, I thought, a really well-played scene. But, you know, she's got no choice in this. And I could not cope with Alice in that moment. I was like, what? Why? Because Jack's coming back and we're going to paint Ellie as the villain of the piece, when in fact it's Luke. Luke is the villain. Luke is the one.
I know. I thought they were doing such a good job of showing that this isn't really a consensual relationship. And now they want to paint it as though it was completely consensual and that it formed under healthy circumstances. And it's like, no, it was a trauma bond, you know, but now they want to walk back on that and act as though, no, they fell for each other in a natural way. It's like, no, they didn't.
I think it speaks to the misogyny that actually it's always the female character that's in the wrong, even though, as you so accurately said, she was a slave. He was in charge. This is a Stockholm-like relationship, and she was forced into it by her older sister, you know. But yet she is the villain from this piece, not Luke. And I mean, obviously Jack's not the villain, but from this, she's the one who we're all kind of, oh, Ellie, how could you betray Jack like that? I don't know, because she's a 14-year-old girl who was forced to do this thing and accidentally thought she felt that way about this person. I don't know, crazy.
Mm-hmm. Oh man, what a great moment for Jack to walk in. I granted, my heart already breaks for both he and Ellie for what's coming down the pipe, because I don't think either of them deserve what's going to happen. But I can't deny the part of me that likes shallow entertainment was like, oh no. this is like Bray asking Amber who the father was. You're just like, oh, this is going to get good.
But Sabine, you need to enter the chat now with your perspective.
But why? I hate Ellie. You know why I hate Ellie?
You're allowed to hate her, sweetie. I promise. I won't say anything. Go ahead. I promise.
I'm so fine.
Yeah.
Let it out. Let all the petty rage out. Go for it, Sabine.
This is a safe space.
Is it?
Yeah.
I get why she had to stay with Luke while they were still captive. But, you know, the moment they were safe, she was still protecting him. I get she's doing that because she formed that bond in that traumatic time. But for any blame he could have gotten for things, she was defending him. And all this time, she's known that this is Luke. You know, he's one of the chosen. He's why your beloved boyfriend got taken away. Well, actually, that was your fault, Ellie. But so, yeah, all I'm thinking is, I'm so glad that Jack walks in on this moment and sees her behaving this way without her still being a captive.
I do think it is at least a good setup for Jack to feel the way he does, 100%, because he didn't have to see Ellie as a captive. He didn't have to see her forced into that situation with Luke. He didn't have to see how uneven that relationship was or the trauma bond that formed from it. So it works because he only sees her as a free person at this point in time and cannot comprehend how an attachment formed between she and Luke. So I actually admit, I think that actually works really well, because otherwise it would make Jack look like a terrible person for blaming her for the attachment that's formed. But because he never saw it in those circumstances, he only sees her as, yeah, whatever you had to do when you were a slave, but you're free now. How can you still have an attachment? It makes sense that he wouldn't get that. And I thought that was actually a smart move to introduce Jack after Ellie is now free. And again, I don't think they do the best job of wrapping up the trauma bond or Stockholm Syndrome storyline between Ellie and Luke. The only thing I think really works is that it doesn't have a happy ending. I do think it's great that that's what Jack sees, and that's what informs his feelings.
That brings Series 3, Episode 35 to a close. Thank you very much to our panel, Liz, Sabine, and Tamsin. And don't forget to like, subscribe, and leave us a message. We're available on all the major platforms. Just search for thetribe.co.uk or Conversations on Eagle Mountain. So we'll see you next time for episode 36. Until then, bye.
Bye.
Goodbye.
Bye.